It's Friday, June 26, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, French authorities say a terrorist attack has occurred in the country's southeast.
I'm afraid whenever there's an attack in one part of the Western world, there could always be follow-up copycat plots elsewhere.
VOA bids farewell to its senior correspondent, and country music star Toby Keith is proud of a new accomplishment. It's all ahead. French President François Hollande today announced that a suspect has been arrested in what he called a terrorist attack, an explosion at a gas factory that killed at least one person in the country's southeast. The attack occurred today on the outskirts of the southeastern city of Lyon. A human head was found pinned to the gates of the factory, reportedly accompanied by a banner or flag with Arabic writing. Mr. Hollande spoke in televised comments from Brussels shortly before making an early exit from a European Union summit.
With clearly an attempt in the intention
de nature
to provoke damages.
Dès lors que
it is a terror attack. There are no doubts about it.
Un cadavre.
Witnesses at the factory in the small town of Saint-Quentin-Fallavier, southeast of Lyon, say at least one attacker drove a car into the factory grounds and set off at least one explosion. It is unclear if the person had any accomplices. I spoke with Sajan Gohel, International Security Director for the Asia-Pacific Foundation in London. What indications are that this could have been a possible Islamist attack?
The barbarity of the attack itself bears the hallmark of a similar tactic that we've seen orchestrated by groups like ISIS. We also know that France has had problems with the transnational terrorism, most recently with the attacks at the Charlie Hebdo offices, and then also the follow-up plot on the Jewish supermarket. Now, we also know that these type of decapitation plots have been attempted in Europe in the past. Remember the Woolwich attack in South London a couple of years ago. So, unfortunately, this definitely seems to be the tactics of a group or individuals ideologically committed to ISIS. Whether it's ISIS itself or not remains to be seen. But this is a worrying sign, and what needs to also be clearly identified is the flag that appears to have been found on scene. If that is an ISIS flag or if that's a flag affiliated to the group, that needs to be investigated too.
Yeah. How would it be known if, say, this was perhaps possibly an attack more related to ISIS as opposed to Al-Qaeda?
The nature of the headings and decapitation is an ISIS tactic. Al-Qaeda, although barbaric in other ways, has not resorted to actual decapitation as yet. It is a tactic that in some ways they felt would be negative in terms of recruiting people, whereas ISIS knows no barbarity of limits. They are constantly pushing the boundaries as to how visually graphic they can get in terms of terrorism.
The location of this attack, it takes place at a factory which apparently is operated by Air Products, and that's a United States-based company. This is also occurring in the southeastern area of France. Is the location significant?
We can't dismiss the location. It could well be significant. As you mentioned, the company itself that was targeted is connected to the United States. This is a remote part of France. It's not a major city. Why would these individuals choose it? They would have done reconnaissance. They would have done planning. The way they seem to have operated is they moved like stealth. There is a lot of deliberate malice involved in this particular plot and the targeting of the location.
And the fact that this occurred on a Friday, is that significant?
Well, that could potentially have implications, especially as it's Sabbath. But we need to remain to be told more details about the potential strategic motivations by the French authorities. They're already investigating this, already on the scene. The main concern will be whether there could be other people involved in this particular cell, whether there could be follow-up plots. That is something that needs to be urgently looked at.
Is this a threat to France or one to Europe as a whole?
I'm afraid whenever there's an attack in one part of the Western world, there could always be follow-up copycat plots elsewhere. Terrorist groups take inspiration from others. They see an event and they want to try and mimic it. So what's happened in Paris is a warning shot across the bow to all of us in the West.
Okay, thank you very much, Dr. Gohel. I really appreciate that.
It's my pleasure.
Okay. That's Sajan Gohel, International Security Director for the Asia Pacific Foundation in London. Well, now we want to take a moment to recognize one of our colleagues who's leaving VOA this week. Andre Dineshner started with VOA in 1980. He served as a correspondent in Geneva, Moscow, and in London. And he was also the VOA Central News Director during the turbulent days following the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks on the United States. Peter Heinlein sat down with Andre to talk about his career and how the world has changed during his tenure.
Andre, when did you start at VOA?
Started in 1980, December 1980, so it'll be 34 and a half years.
And what were you doing in 1980?
1980, I was hired by VOA as a writer and was on the various regional desks, and then became a correspondent and was sent to Geneva in 1984 to open the Geneva Bureau.
It was Cold War era, and Geneva was sort of a midpoint between East and West, where a lot of the action was taking place. What did you see in Geneva?
Everything over there. I mean, at that time, yeah, like I said, OPEC was in full gear. The arms control negotiations between the United States and the Soviet Union, the Iran-Iraq talks. It was a bureau that was full of news.
Well, you were the first VOA correspondent in the Soviet Union.
That's correct.
Actually, you may have been the only one.
That's right, because after that, during the Gorbachev era, everything came to an end.
This was a momentous occasion in history, and you were there. How did you cover it? How did you see it?
We would need 150 correspondents to cover what was happening in the Soviet Union at that time. The whole system was disintegrating. Every day was just full of surprises. I told the kids that they were witnessing history that will be written in history books. And so it was an unbelievable time, because you never stopped.
Could you talk about the geopolitical significance of that moment?
I never thought I'd see the end of the Soviet Union in my lifetime, and it's been a fantastic change from that standpoint. And I think what one has to understand is that maybe democracy, the way we see it, is not exactly what would fit the Russian people. I'm not saying that autocratic regime and completely the old Stalinist or the old Soviet system, but the Gorbachev always said that there was a third way, and maybe Russia is going to find that third way, a little bit between democracy and between autocracy.
A lot of people obviously came forth that we had not previously known were listening to VOA. Is VOA still relevant in that respect?
I think it is. Like any news organization now, it is changing, but I think VOA has a role to play, and I think it will continue, albeit it may be different, but I think it's a role that will continue.
Well, thank you, Andre. Your imminent retirement is a moment at VOA. We're going to be less because of your departure, and you've given so much to us, and we thank you so much for a great run.
Thank you, Peter, for those kind words. Thank you.
That's senior correspondent Andre Dineshner, and we wish him all the best as he retires. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
An international team of scientists are reporting that they have discovered a comet-like tail trailing a small exoplanet, one outside of our solar system, and only 33 light-years away. The tail is really a cloud of hydrogen escaping from the exoplanet, identified as GJ-436b. The scientists say that the hydrogen cloud is being created as X-rays from its sun, a red dwarf star, burn off the exoplanet's upper atmosphere. While escaping gas has already been observed in larger gas giant exoplanets, scientists were quite surprised to see the phenomenon on such a smaller planet. They say their observations might help others imagine what could happen to Earth several billion years from now when our sun is expected to become a red giant. Astrophysicists say that Earth could then be transformed into a giant comet that resembles GJ-436b. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll have some good news for country music star Toby Keith. It's time now for this week's Immigrant Profile, where we meet an immigrant to the United States and learn about how he got to the U.S. and the challenges and rewards of making a new life here. Well, today, VOA New York correspondent Adam Phillips introduces us to master chef and restaurateur Vincenzo Pezzilli, who came to America in 1998 with a simple desire to share the sublime cuisine of his native Rome with New Yorkers who are sure they've already tasted it all. Hello, Adam. Tell us a little bit about Vincenzo.
Thanks, Sarah. I'll be glad to. I first met Vincenzo when I was a customer at his little cozy restaurant on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, right near my house. And I'd been to Italy many times before as a tourist, and I know how fantastic the food is, very fresh. But I want to tell you that his cooking put me right back in the old country without a passport or a need for a ticket. But it was really his passion for his work, his Italian heritage, and his incredible drive that told me he'd be a great immigrant for our listeners to meet. So last week, we sat down to talk at a table in his restaurant. But before we began, he asked one of his waiters for a piping hot, bitter espresso coffee. That's when he began to tell me that his lifelong affair with Italian cooking began when he was a young boy, a mere bambino, in Rome.
I think I was fortunate because since I was a kid, I always wake up very early in the morning and all the mothers and the grandmas preparing the meal. And that was, to me, fascinating, and I always loved food. I think it was a love since I was a kid. And I started like that. I learned how to do penne arrabbiata for the first time without burning the garlic or the entire kitchen. And that same year, my mother, for Christmas, she presented me a wok and a Chinese cookbook, and I started experimenting with that. Mama Loretta was my first teacher, and she was not an easy teacher. She was pushy and put me under pressure, and I got screamed many, many times. But they teach me something. Here's the espresso. There you go.
Have a sip.
I love the little shot of espresso in the morning. It's something very special.
So you wanted to come to America, like, as an adult, what made you decide that this was a place you wanted to go? It's not easy just to pick up and go.
Well, it was kind of a pick up and go. I was coming out from three-star Michelin restaurant in France, and I wanted to do a United States experience. And I actually went straight to the West Coast. Everybody talked to me about San Francisco, and I thought San Francisco was the gastronomical capital of the United States, let's put it this way. And I had to tell you the truth. I was disappointed. However, on my way back, I stopped in New York, and friend of a friend of a friend, we end up eating together, and I was offered a job. So it was actually a kind of a mistake to end up in New York. It was never in my intention. I always thought California, probably because I come from Italy, I like the weather and the girls. Instead, here I am now. I'm almost 17 years.
What is it for you? I mean, why would you stay?
I like the energy, the competition, a little bit of all those dramatic things. Somehow work well with the Italian drama, and we kind of like the struggle of life. I'm afraid that many times people have the tendency to come to New York or the tendency to think about the American dream as this easy ticket for success. You know, you have to work hard in order to achieve the American dream. You have to live your life like a company, have a mission statement, know who you are and know where you want to go. Never give up, no matter what comes against you. I went through a bankruptcy several years ago. I almost lost $1 million. And I went through stress of life that I would say many people would have killed themselves. But you need to keep up, you need to go on, and eventually you'll take care of things, and who knows, you might get lucky.
Your restaurant is extremely successful. I come in here and I see people having a good time. There's not a table to be had. How did you build this? I mean, what did you do?
My secret is love. When I cook or when I teach my guys, first of all, I told them never to put out anything they wouldn't eat themselves. That's the number one. I don't have a lot of money, so a lot of the build is being done by myself, and a lot of the investing is being done as money come in. It doesn't come easy. It comes with a lot of struggle, and sometimes people might look at you a little crazy, like the crazy artist.
What is the gift that you, as an immigrant from where you're from and your perspective, bring to New York and America?
My main thing is not to be too materialistic, and there is a sensuality to life that comes from the everyday things that we do. For the Italians, what is the most important things when they wake up in the morning? What are going to eat today and what are we going to dress? That's why everybody's dressing fabulously and they all eat good food. That's the priority in Italy. Completely different than the one that I have in New York. My problem in New York is how I'm going to make money today.
So you're a combination.
I'm a combination.
So everybody contributes their own thing here, is that what you're saying?
Yes, particularly in the United States. In my restaurant, no, we are very Italian. We try to keep the Italian way, even the way how we serve. I'm not really Polish when we serve, and if you like it, you stay. If you don't like it, we don't change it. You can go somewhere else.
Is there an Italian expression that kind of sums up some of this?
Me ne frego. Me ne frego. It's basically I don't care, you know, whatever people say, I just go for my way and I try to do the best. And I think that at the end people appreciate when you don't sell yourself too much.
Well, this conversation has made me very hungry, Adam. Thanks for giving us a seat at the table.
You're so welcome, Sarah, and thank you, or should I say, grazie.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on Saturdays and Sundays. That's Press Conference USA. Every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Country singer Toby Keith is known as a good time artist and an entrepreneur, but he says a recent induction is his greatest achievement. Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong and David Byrd tell us about that and a new number one hit for new artist Kelsey Ballerini.
His first big radio hit was I Should Have Been a Cowboy, but now Toby Keith is a member of the Hall of Fame for songwriters. He went in there recently with some pretty big names, including Cyndi Lauper and Bobby Braddock. Here to talk about that and all things country music is VOA's Nikki Strong. Nikki, Toby Keith, he has been on the country music charts for almost 20 years now?
Yes, he's major. I think he has over 17 albums. He's quite prolific singer-songwriter. And he considers getting into the Songwriters Hall of Fame the pinnacle of his career.
Rather than performing in front of thousands of people in
yes,
stadiums.
Exactly.
This is more important.
This was very important to him, to be acknowledged as a songwriter. He does say that. And he dedicates the honor to his grandmother, who gave him his first guitar.
Oh,
yeah,
well, isn't that
sweet.
Nice? Now, he also, I understand he was introduced by Stephen Colbert or something?
Yes, Stephen Colbert introduced him, and Stephen Colbert sang. And people were like, you know, he was like, okay. He knew Colbert was going to introduce him, but he didn't know Colbert was going to sing.
Right.
And Colbert did a decent job. A decent job.
A decent job.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, now also I mentioned Bobby Braddock, and he is the songwriter who wrote one of Toby's hits. You said that he sang Toby's song, I Want to Talk About Me.
See, this is hilarious. Bobby Braddock, of course, another prolific songwriter who's written for tons of people, he performed at the ceremony, and he sang I Want to Talk About Me. Now, this was a song that he originally wrote for Blake Shelton.
Mm.
But Toby Keith wound up recording it and sending it to the top of the Billboard charts in 2001.
Now, speaking of songwriters and country music, Kelsea Ballerini is a young lady who is lighting up the country music chart with her new song, and it's Love Me Like You Mean It.
Yes, I love the song. When I first started doing country hits, that was the song that stuck with me.
Really?
Yep, it was 16, I think, on the charts at that time.
But it's number one on the airplay chart now.
Yes, the country airplay. I'm like, go Kelsea. And she's an underdog, which is what makes it great. She's not on a big-time label. She's on an independent label. So
right.
This is quite an accomplishment.
And it's a very, very catchy. It comes out at a time of summer here in the Northern Hemisphere.
Yes.
I can just picture, you know, kind of driving down the road with the windows open.
Yes.
Got this thing going. And it's, you know, it's also significant in that it is the first country single, I understand. First time an artist has had her debut single land at number one since Carrie Underwood did
it? Yes, first female.
Wow.
Yes. So this is perfect timing in light of the backlash, you know, when you had the major radio consultant that was saying women are tomatoes, they're garnishes, they're not the meat. And here comes Kelsea Ballerini.
And that is Nikki Strong and David Byrd. Well, that's our show for today. Please remember to visit our website. You can get to it at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This month marks 1 year since Nadia Savchenko was abducted in eastern Ukraine and smuggled against her will into Russia. 1 year of her being held hostage under illegal detention, and 1 year of absolute heartache for her mother, her family, and the people of Ukraine. In a statement marking the one-year anniversary of Savchenko's detention, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Samantha Power said that Nadia has endured relentless interrogations, solitary confinement, and forced psychiatric evaluation. Recently, Russian courts extended her detention yet again until September 30th. This continued imprisonment, said Ambassador Power, is indefensible, illegal, and it flies in the face of Russia's commitments under the Minsk agreements. Under the Minsk II agreement, Russia must release all hostages and illegally held persons. Nadia Savchenko, a member of the Supreme Council of Ukraine, also known as the Verkhovna Rada or Ukrainian Parliament, and a helicopter pilot in the Ukrainian military, was seized by Russia-backed separatists in 2014 before they transferred her to Russian custody, and was charged in connection with the deaths of two Russian journalists covering the conflict fomented by Russia in eastern Ukraine. Savchenko has held a lengthy hunger strike, protesting her arrest, and insists that the charges against her are fabricated. The United States remains deeply concerned about the state of Ms. Savchenko's health and the terms of her detention. Civil society groups believe that there are at least 10 other Ukrainians being subjected to politically motivated prosecution in Russia. Other individuals being held in Russia without due process include Ukrainian filmmaker Oleg Sentsov and civic activist Oleksandr Kolchenko. They have been held in pretrial detention for nearly a year since their arrest in Crimea on May 11, 2014. They were arrested on dubious charges of plotting terrorism. Speaking at a hearing on April 8th in Moscow's Leofortovo District Court, Mr. Sentsov reportedly said that he could not agree with the decision to extend his custody since there had not been any evidence presented by the prosecution of his alleged participation in or organization of terrorist activities in Crimea. the United States once again calls for Russia's complete and immediate implementation of the Minsk agreements, including the return of Nadia Savchenko, Oleg Sentsov, Alexander Kolchenko, and all unlawfully detained persons. The U.S. further calls on Russia to withdraw all of its forces from Ukrainian territory and end its occupation of Crimea.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.